Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Jabari Asim, and consider the moment when you know what you are going to become. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 353 of the podcast with Jabari Asim. In Preaching to the Chickens, Jabari retells a story of Congressman John Lewis's childhood and invites readers to draw connections between who we are as children and what it may tell about who we'll become. Congressman Lewis is one of the last living heroes of the Civil Rights Movement, and his words and work still have great influence in challenging the ways in which we stand up for one another and for just causes. And this story is so grounded in humility, in being down in the dirt, in planting seeds and watching them grow, it stands apart as a picture book for all ages that calls the reader to consider how we're using our words and our thoughts to affect change in others. And once your eyes set sight on E.B. Lewis's watercolors, this book won't leave your hands. Here's episode number 353 of the podcast with Jabari Asim. Welcome to the podcast, Jabari Asim. I'm glad to have this opportunity to talk to you tonight.
Oh, Matthew, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
I like to share every once in a while that I get these books that just arrive on my doorstep unannounced. These things that I haven't been seeking them out. I feel like they've been seeking me out. And your book, Preaching to the Chickens, I feel like has been seeking a lot of us out, and it is wonderful. So thank you for the time you committed to craft those words. It's such a beautiful book.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I'm really, you never know what kind of response you're going to get when you do a book. When you're first done, you're kind of like, oh yeah, this was great. This is great. And then, you know, it only takes a few minutes for doubts to begin to settle in and go, now I'm not so sure, you know. So it's gratifying when things work out the way you hoped that they would.
Well, to be able to capture the story of John Lewis as a child, to be able to capture his presence, his passion, and to do it in such beautiful poetic text, and then my word, to have E.B. Lewis illustrate your book.
I know.
My gosh, everything just came together. The focus, the message, the words, the art. It's a perfect package. I love it.
Yeah, that was a dream. I remember telling my wife, you know, it'd be great if E.B. Lewis could do this book, but I'm sure he's booked until the year 2025 and it won't be available. And when I finally, you know, talked to him after the book was done, I told him that. I said, you know, I wanted you to do this book, but I was certain that you had a lot of projects. And he told me, he said, actually, I did have a lot of projects, but after I read your manuscript, I moved yours to the top of the pile. So I said, yes.
There went the doubt fluttering out the
Yes.
window. Oh,
Right.
man,
So.
did you have the chance? Let me back up. I
Oh,
was gonna jump
sure.
right into asking about
Yeah.
illustration, but let me first give you the chance for the listening audience that hasn't reached this book yet, connected with this book yet. Why don't you just share a little book talk of what Preaching to the Chickens is all about?
Yeah, it's about the civil rights legend, Congressman John Lewis, who's, really one of the last living heroes from the civil rights movement of the 1960s. And he was amazingly heroic during that period and continues to be so. So he's one of my personal heroes. Several of the women and men of that generation are people that I admire a great deal and want to write about. So I set out to write about John Lewis and amplify an episode in his childhood when he was growing up on a farm in the South and would practice his delivery as a preacher because at that time he aspired to be a preacher. So he practiced with the chickens in his yard, in his farmyard. And it's a story he had told many times. And he also writes about it in his memoir, which had influenced me a great deal, his memoir, Walking with the Wind. And remains one of my favorite books. And so I set out to tell the story, in picture book form, to simplify it, to make it sort of an enjoyable and lyrical, and convey just sort of an episode and sort of a day in the life of young John Lewis, and also what life was like on the farm with his family and the things that they did. And the project just kind of emerged from that idea.
Yes, I as well. I was saying to you before recording that I had the opportunity to hear him speak at the School Library Journal Leadership Summit. He was talking about the March Trilogy, which of course went on to win all of these great awards as it should. What a landmark graphic
Yes.
novel. But to hear him tell this story as well, and to have very recently read your book and heard have been aware of them both side by side, was such a beautiful thing. You capture him in glorious light. And the story itself, to picture him, to know him, and to picture him in front of these chickens, and the way that he shares, as you wrote in his book, you write in a soft voice, this is young John down on the ground with his chickens. He says in a soft voice, John would say to them, "Enjoy this day that God has given us." And the chickens, looking straight at him, seem to understand. And for you to bring up over and over in this book that way that he had this commanding presence, but also a penetrating way of talking to the people in front of him, and in this case, the chickens in front of him, of just being able to communicate, that great gift of communication, was something that I feel like you tempered so well in your text.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, he's a mesmerizing speaker, and he's sort of a combination. He can be very fiery, but at the same time, he's extremely compassionate. And it's the compassionate part I think I was thinking about as I was writing that about that because he speaks about empathy and love and mutual understanding. I have to say, in a way that's more persuasive somehow to me than a lot of people I've heard talk about those things. And that's what always kind of resonated with me. And I wanted to be sure to try to convey that in the language as I tried to work out the story. How can I make this a story that's not merely a repetition of the way he tells the story when he gives speeches and things? How can I animate this in a way that will be compelling to young readers? So I thought, maybe if there's some kind of understanding between him and these chickens, that's a theme that I can develop and run with. And that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah, and you bounce back and forth from that so well between being at the farm and being at church and hearing the singing and then going back to the farm. I feel like that back and forth allows such a beautiful parallel for those readers. It's wonderful. And I think about the way that John Lewis is so much a, I mean, he has that fierce love when you hear him talk. He's an exceptional preacher, and he's lived a life that he knows how to share, and he knows how to draw that passion out, I think, in all of us. So it was a tall order for you to approach this story, and you nailed it. I can feel, reading it, I just felt like there was this anticipation. There was something there that you captured. There was, maybe we should say, there was a heart there, an essence there that beautifully did not get edited out over the time and the drafts and the crafting that you worked on this. So
yeah, I mean, I was really fortunate. My editor was Nancy Paulson.
Oh, and, my word. And, I didn't even connect that. Yes, of course.
And it's actually the first book we had done together. And, you know, it worked out really well. She's, as you know, a terrific editor and, you know, a gentle guiding hand as we worked through the manuscript. And the thing is, you know, I've always been sort of fascinated by memoirs of people who've been enormously successful. And the thing that I'm always looking for in those memoirs is that moment when they knew what they were going to become. I love that. And like every memoir, I try to find that spot where all of a sudden they knew. And, you know, John Lewis talks about it in Walking with the Wind, that moment when he knew, you know, I'm going to speak before crowds. I'm going to move people in a significant way. And he was a little boy, you know, he was a little boy when he realized that, and which is kind of amazing. And then he set out to practice, you know, and I'm just kind of fascinated by particularly greatness, you know, people who turn out to be great and how somehow they got some epiphany or some flash of insight, you know, sometimes as a child, sometimes as an adult, but at some point it hits them. This is why I'm here. This is my purpose. This is what I'm meant to do. And I love reading about that. And so I wanted to sort of convey that in a children's book.
Yes. First off, I just want to say, because I can't stop thinking it as you're talking, that I wanted to ask, have you had that moment? I feel like the way I know your other books, I know the work that you've done, and I know, you know, that you're also a professor, that you are up there in Boston at Emerson, and that you've done many, many other things. Have you, or do you recognize that moment, that time in your life where you realized that it was this, perhaps it was this storytelling quality or this working with individuals? What was that for you?
Oh, sure. You know, but first I'll say I had a couple of moments where I thought I was meant to be a writer, but I shook it off. You know, I convinced myself that maybe I wasn't, you know, I was looking for something more practical maybe. So I had a couple moments, probably as early as elementary school when I really enjoyed it, but I thought, you know, this is not going to be the thing. This is just going to be some fun thing that I do. Huh. And then I had one teacher in high school kind of pulled me aside and said, you know, you're supposed to be a writer. This is something you should do. And I thanked her, and she was a great teacher. And I didn't think about it anymore.
That's amazing.
She wrote me a little note, you know, a little handwritten note. And I still actually have that note somewhere because she was a American lit teacher, and she was a very difficult teacher. I had a reputation for being very mean. And she loved me and gave me really good grades and said, you know, this is what you should be doing. So I think I was just so staggered and so pleased that it worked out so well because I dreaded being in her classroom. But so then I went to college, and I was a political science major. I was pre-law. And the poet Gwendolyn Brooks came to our campus. And she was the first African American to win the Pulitzer Prize for poetry. She won in 1950. And she came to our campus, and she did a 3-day residency at the Women's Studies Residential College. And I guess I had come across some of her work enough to be curious about it. And so I decided I would go to her first talk or her first residency, whatever she did, the first thing she did. And I got so mesmerized, Matthew, that I cut all my classes. I skipped every class I had for 3 days, and I just kind of stalked her. wherever she was on campus, she would look up, and there's that guy again. And, you know, at the end of the 3 days, I called my mother, and I said, you know, Mom, I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. And there was this long pause on the phone, and finally she said, "That's okay, baby. Medicine is a perfectly respectable profession." You know, and I said, "Medicine? Medicine? What are you talking about?" You know. So it was a bit of an uphill approach with my parents to tell them, you know, this is what I wanted to do. I was determined to do it at that point. And so I really began to practice and write furiously. But as you know, I write a lot of things for adults.
Yes.
And so my first published poem, I was 22 when I wrote it. And I think it was published when I was 26, I think. So, you know, it was sitting around for a while, but I had already begun to do some interesting things. And I guess I've done 5 books for adults, and I think 8 books for children. And I had always planned to do children's books, but I was a journalist. I was deputy editor of Washington Post Book World, and one of my responsibilities was children's books coverage. So I spent a lot of time with children's books. My wife used to be a professional storyteller, and she also was a children's librarian for a couple of years. So we were kind of immersed in children's books.
Yeah.
And also we have 5 children, I should mention.
So, oh, right
on. So, I mean, they're mostly grown now. We only have 2 at home. But so some of my early stuff kind of came out of attempts to entertain our own children and, you know, get them to take a nap or take a bath or whatever. And so, you know, from that, I began to develop children's books. But I mean, that's sort of a long way of saying, yeah, I guess I was in college and I finally had that moment where I could not resist it anymore. And I knew nothing made me happier. You know, it's like I had political science as my major, and I was spending all my time with my electives, which were like English lit, American lit, and I would just read all that stuff. And it's like, well, I really should be studying my political science now, but I'm so drawn to this other stuff, you know. And eventually the light bulb went off over my head and I thought, well, there's a reason for that and I should pay attention to it.
Well, first off, to be your children and to grow up in a house that so values storytelling is a gift in and of itself. But I love that the way that being a storyteller, the way you just sort of followed your muse away from as much as you were resisting it.
Yeah.
That's so wonderful to know that it came around that way. Do you find, I mean, I know that you also, in addition to teaching, you're also the executive editor for the magazine, The Crisis, for NAACP.
Yeah.
With all of that, do you find just that story comes to you in the form of different audiences, and so you just continue to allow the story to be for what audience it is? Or are you focusing more on children's work now, or just what does writing look like for you in that term?
I'm always working on probably in each of those areas, you know. I don't know. I tend to do it all. I mean, I compartmentalize it sometimes. Like, for example, when I was working on one of my nonfiction books, this was some years ago, and I had taken a 6-month leave from the Washington Post. So I would work on the nonfiction book, you know, probably till about noon, and, you know, then break. And then in the afternoon, I would work on fiction, which became my first collection of stories for adults. So I always kind of mix it up, I guess. I'm always doing multiple things. So I'm working on, you know, some adult projects now, but also some children's projects, you know, because I want to do it all and I don't want to be idle.
I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
To be able to switch projects too, I think gives your brain the stimulation to be, I mean, writing fiction and writing nonfiction, writing for children and all of that different writing is so different and so differently stimulating. So I get it. I love it. I love that that continues to be what drives you. That's cool.
Yeah, it's you know, it's also a kind of, it's stimulation, but it's also a kind of relief, you know. It's like when I'm really involved in one particular project and I feel like a headache coming on or something, then I stop and jump to the next project, and it kind of helps me, you know, clear my brain and enable me to keep working and, you know, juggle these different products. projects and these different editors and everything else I have going. So I mean, I direct the graduate program in creative writing at Emerson, the MFA program. So we're immersed in applications right now. It's application season. So I'm reading, applications by the dozens,
Oh boy.
and just doing all this other stuff. But it's I don't know. It's really what I like to do. It's really what I like. I envisioned a life in letters, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to pursue that.
In all of this different work that you have, are you also able at any time to get out to school visits and to be in front of your young audience?
I've had very little opportunity. I shouldn't say opportunity. I've had plenty of opportunities. I've had a few chances to really respond to them. So I do some of that, but not nearly as much, I would say, as a number of my peers who are also children's book authors, but that's all they do.
Yeah, so your schedule, and because you're writing for such a wide audience and involved in so many things, I would imagine it makes it difficult.
It's real hard. So I don't get to do that nearly as much as one might think. I'm often invited to, but many times I just can't do it.
Well, at the very least, you're being part of story times, though. You're being part of library collections, you're being part of book lists and book awards and things like that. So that's they know you. They're reaching you. They have you.
And I'm grateful for that. I mean, librarians have been particularly wonderful, and bookstore owners, they hand sell the books, and that's great. That's I'm really, that's another thing you can't necessarily anticipate or count on. But I've been really fortunate in that area. Before we started recording, you and I were talking about the Baltimore area, and the Baltimore library system has been amazing for me for all of my books. They've just enthusiastically embraced them and promoted them. Probably as far as library systems go, I don't know if I've had a bigger champion than the Baltimore library system.
Yeah, Enoch Pratt, way to go, guys.
Enoch Pratt has been enormously kind to me.
Nice. That's good to know. I feel like I teach in the right state when it comes to libraries. I feel like Maryland takes good care of its public libraries and of its school libraries. So to hear you say that as an author is affirming and just feels really great.
I would say that's definitely true. And similarly, I remember when my first children's book came out, I did a number of readings at Prince George's County library branches. And I remember one of my first readings, the room was packed with like really informed moms and their kids, and I found out they were a homeschooling group, and they had just come in and sort of all signed up for the reading, and it was amazing. It was amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've been holding on to this out of excitement, and I feel like the time is right. Let me ask you about the illustrations in Preaching to the Chickens.
Oh, sure.
When you had written this book, did you have, I know there are some cases where the author gets to sort of say, well, here are some people that I think the illustrations would lend themselves well to the book. This style of illustration. But you mentioned that you had E.B. White in mind. Did you have, or E.B. Lewis, E.B. White, listen to me go now. but did you have the chance to mention that to Nancy Paulson as you were working on the edits of this manuscript?
Well, it's funny. I think by happy coincidence, she may have mentioned it first. She may, yeah, she
No.
may have, she may have said, "Well, what do you think of E.B. Lewis?" And I think I just kind of laughed out loud. Like, well, what do you think I think of E.B. Lewis? He's great. Not, is this a tease or,
Yeah, are we talking about E.B. Lewis in
that's
general? You're not talking about my manuscript, are you?
So, so we said, well, we should probably put together a list of illustrators, and she was like, well, let's see what he says, So I said, yeah, okay. And that's when I was talking to my wife. I was like, yeah, probably won't happen, so I'm not going to think about that too much, And then when he signed on, I was like, wow, it's already escalating in my mind in terms of the possibilities, you know. So that was terrific.
Well, that's really cool. And it's cool to hear too that you had the opportunity to meet him after the book was published, or just after he accepted the
Well, the
book.
thing is, we had known each other for a number of years because we do these children's book festivals. Like, there's one in Philadelphia, the African American Children's Book Festival, and we've both done that one a number of times, and ended up sitting next to each other and that sort of thing. And he's a very personable guy, so we knew each other already, but we just hadn't had an opportunity to work together.
To work together. Well, I'm glad that you did. Have you had the chance to share your book with John Lewis?
I have not. I look.
No, I know. I was like feeling tingles asking that, like, do I dare ask this?
I look forward to that opportunity. I mean, I hope that will happen. I have had the opportunity to meet him, but not since doing the book. I've met him in previous encounters. When Walking with the Wind came out, I reviewed it for the Washington Post, and they ran it on the front page of the book review section.
Oh, wow.
And that was, I mean, I admired Lewis up to that point, but I think my admiration kind of expanded significantly after reading that book. And then I made a point of going to hear him speak. I heard him speak at the National Archives in Washington, then somewhere else, and then at the National Book Festival at that time was held on the mall, the National Mall, and it was my honor to introduce him to the audience when he read from the book there, many years ago. And that was the first time we ever shook hands, and we haven't had much interaction since then. But I've continued to admire him and look forward to having that opportunity again.
I wonder if, so I go to the National Book Festival every year and have gone since they started it. And I loved when it was on the mall, and I understand, reasons to move it to the convention center. But I do know that the Library of Congress has done a really good job of keeping video of all of the talks that different people have given at the book fest. I wonder if that's still online somewhere. I'll have to go look it up. I'll link it to this.
It could be. I mean, it was on C-SPAN and all of that, but back in the day, yeah, that was. I'm trying to think. I don't even know if I had published any children's books yet at that time, and it certainly hadn't occurred to me that I would be writing about him someday.
Well, to have that be the road, to know that sometimes you have the opportunity to know someone and respect someone and admire them, and then have the chance to give back, whether through your book review or through, in this case, writing this beautiful picture book about him. I think that those opportunities, I think, don't go unnoticed. I think about, I guess it's making me think of working with children, in the way that you just don't know the influence you're having on someone, and every once in a while we get a chance to give back. So I'm positive that this book has already reached John Lewis or will soon, and I know when he does, just how I think beside himself with pride that this beautiful expression of love was created in his honor.
I hope so. I mean, I think part of it is, he's been enormously busy with March. This has been the season of March, and he probably hasn't had an opportunity to think about much else beyond that. And of course, his work in Congress, which is, of enormous importance. So I'm sure he'll get to it at some point.
And it's been wonderful to see him in the news and speaking out, and just the political climate has been one that I think a new generation of young people. I know my students all had the opportunity to get to know who this guy was and the passion that he leads with. So that's been a great blessing. Listen, Jabari, it's been amazing talking to you. I feel so grateful that not only did the book reach me, but I had a chance to sit down with you. Thank you for your time tonight.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure.
Before I let you go, I want to give you last word and bring it back to those students with this question that I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message could I bring to them from you?
Well, I would just suggest that they try to do three things every day. And those three things would be read, play, and laugh.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Jason Bays shares The Adventures of Kung Fu Robot, Book 1, How to Make a Peanut Butter, Jelly, and Kung Fu Sandwich. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.